comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, ladies and gentlemen. Bon dia, buenos dias, buonasera, ni hao, sawadikap. I'm delighted you're here from wherever you happen to be all over this planet. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I know there are a million things you could be doing, but you've chosen to be here, and I do appreciate it. And I want you to know I do. Be sure you subscribe to the K-Files, our free weekly newsletter, if you haven't done so. Just click the link on my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and subscribe. And you'll start getting one of the best publications that's out there. It's free, and you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. We're running, for our members, a test tonight. I sent all of our members a message in their members' message box and explained the test, the purpose of the test, what we're doing. It's a test for the video. You have your choice of two different players tonight, and I really need to know which one of those works best for you, and also if neither one of them is satisfactory, I need to know that. So your assistance would be greatly appreciated. When you open up the to go watch the show, there are the two player links, but there's also a feedback link. Please use that. Okay, it'll automatically sort in my inbox to where it's supposed to go, so I know that's what it is. And let me know what you think about the players. Now, so far this week, we have delved into futuristic science in a big, big way. Futuristic science that really, we think of it as futuristic, but it's here right now and is being used right now against citizens in this country and around the world. Last night, we heard from Marshall Masters and his theory about the approach of Planet X. And he talked about how the South Pole Telescope would be in a perfect position so that it really ought to be able to see Planet X right now. Well, guess what? Tonight, I'm going to take you on a little journey. We're going to the South Pole. We're going to see the South Pole Telescope. And we're going to be discovering how, if what Marshall Masters told us last night is accurate, how the South Pole Telescope may be tied up with what's going on at Lake Vostok. And there's some new information about what's going on at Lake Vostok. Lake Vostok, of course, is the liquid water lake, a big one, that is under about 2.25 miles of ice on Antarctica. What's going on at Lake Vostok and what's going on at the South Pole Telescope may, and I stress the word may be somehow linked. So we'll take a look at that. For those of you who are watching the show, you'll get to see some pictures of all of that. For those of you who are not watching the show, join our members area, and then you can watch the show live as well. We'll be back right after this.
Come on.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Tonight we're going to be talking about what's going on the very, very cold, unbelievably cold continent of Antarctica. As I said at the top of the show, Marshall Masters talked to us last night about the approach of Planet X. And Marshall has done a lot of research and a lot of writing about this, and it is his theory, and he would say that it's way beyond theory. He's absolutely certain of it. It is his position that Planet X, or whatever you wish to call it, is incoming, and that it will begin to be visible with the naked eye late in 2011, this year. And that we will see then, as it continues to approach, an increase in disasters. He talked about how its approach could already possibly be affecting our magnetic field, and he gave some evidence for that. But in all of that conversation, he mentioned, and you'll remember this if you heard the show, he mentioned the South Pole Telescope. Now, this is the most expensive telescope ever built. It works in the microwave length, in the microwave frequencies. It is the most expensive telescope, ground-based telescope, ever built. And it's setting right on the South Pole. As a matter of fact, I'm going to show you a picture or two of it, and we'll start out, for those who are watching, with a picture of the Amundsen Scott South Pole Station. That's where it's located. Now, there's a very tenuous, at least at this point, a very tenuous, but a very interesting possible link between the South Pole Telescope and what's happening at Lake Vostok. Do you remember Lake Vostok? You know, the first time I did a show about Lake Vostok, I was still in Kosovo. That's how long this has been going on. It actually began in 1999, they discovered that there is this liquid water lake at the Russian Antarctic site. The Russians have a scientific site. And the name of that site is Vostok. And they discovered that directly under this site, their scientific site, about 2 miles, 2.25 miles down, there's a big cavity in the ice. A big cavity. And that there's liquid water, there's a liquid water lake inside that cavity. Now, there's... So that you understand, there's it's not like a bubble with water in it. It's not like a hole in the ice and it's got water in it that's liquid. There's actually a cavity so that you have a liquid water lake and then an airspace, and then the ice begins and the ice goes up like 2.25 miles. So this is a liquid water lake. Well, NASA and JPL, of course, were ecstatic about this because it gave them a place where they could go test their planned technology for drilling for water on Mars. Because they believed that it was, first of all, the conditions were very much like where they would be drilling on Mars. And, you know, with the ice and the extreme cold. And it would give them the opportunity to test their equipment and their methods and their plans to drill for water on Mars. They held a workshop, actually, at the Los Alamos National Laboratory to plan a water drilling mission on Mars. And that was in 1998. So they were already thinking in those terms, and then Lake Vostok was discovered. So you can imagine how excited they were. Some of you will remember the show that I did way back in 2000. You remember the show that I did where I gave you the link where you could go see the notes from the workshop on the website. Those are gone now. And one of the things that was talked about in those notes, it said that it was decided, they had scientists from government and you had scientists from industry, private scientists, just a whole bunch of them from big companies. And it was decided that what would be used on Mars is, and I quote, the proven successful Russian drilling technology. Proven successful Russian lunar drilling technology. Now, there's only one way that you can prove that lunar drilling technology is successful. There's only one way you can do that, and that's you have to use it on the moon. You have to actually drill something on the moon with this technology. And it says the proven successful Russian lunar drilling technology. That was in 1998. Some of you remember that show. Like I say, it was a long time ago. I was in Kosovo. But then in 1999, when they found this liquid water lake under 2.25 miles of ice in Antarctica, they were ecstatic. And so they rushed people over there and began setting up and getting ready. And then all of a sudden, just like that, JPL said, that's it, we're through, we're out of here. NASA said, we're out of here. Just like that. What happened? Well, some of you know the story. What happened was, in preparation for all of this, they attempted to do magnetic resonance imaging mapping of the lake. Now, this lake is big, okay? This is not a little lake. It's big. Now, for those who are watching, you see a map of Antarctica, and you see where the South Pole is, and to the south-southeast of the South Pole, 807.7 miles away, is Lake Vostok. You also see a black and white picture taken from a satellite of Lake Vostok. It is 160 miles long. It's 50 miles wide. It's over 12,000 feet deep. 1,200 feet deep. Over 1,200 feet. At one point, it's about 1,300 feet. This is a big lake. So they were going, as you can see, it's just covered in ice. So they were going to do magnetic resonance imaging to see where would be the best place for them to do their drilling experiment to test out what they were going to be doing on Mars. Well, as the plane would fly over and do magnetic resonance imaging, and it would do it, you know, there'd be like a strip, and then it'd fly back over and going the other way, I guess, and there'd be another strip. And you put them all together, and then you have, you know, a picture of what's down there. As they flew and got near the north end of Lake Vostok, the magnetic resonance imaging equipment pegged out. I mean, if you can imagine, do you remember, well, many of you will remember this. We used to have flash bulbs, remember that, for cameras. Now it's all, you know, electronic, but we used to have flash bulbs. And you remember you're looking at the camera and all of a sudden the whole room goes white. Some strobes do that, but they're so fast. But the flash bulbs were not that fast. And so the whole room would just go white, and then you'd have little dots in front of your eyes for a while. You remember that? Well, that's essentially what happened to the MRI equipment. It just flared. Something was giving off an incredibly strong magnetic signal. So they landed the plane and they checked the equipment. They checked the calibration on the equipment. They thought it had to be something wrong with the equipment. They went back up, and when they got near the north end of the lake again, they got that magnetic flare again in their equipment. They discovered that there was a magnetic anomaly at the north end of Lake Vostok, under that ice. One of the researchers that was working on the mapping said this. He said, this anomaly is so large that it cannot be the product of daily change in the magnetic field. His name is Michael, and I guess that's pronounced Studinger. Now listen to that again. The anomaly is so large that it cannot be the product of a daily change in the magnetic field. It's got to be something else. It's not anything normal that we're used to. It's got to be something else. Well, just how large was it? Well, folks, when I say it was large, I mean it was large. Remember, this lake is 160 miles long. This anomaly is 65 miles by 46 miles. It's 65 miles long. That's more than a third of the lake. Long, 46 miles wide. Now that lake at its widest point is 50 miles wide. This magnetic anomaly is gigantic. It's not just a little something, and it's way too strong for this to be the daily change in the magnetic field. Of course, the magnetic field does change daily, and so and they measure that. Well, when they found this, instead of saying, well, wow, this is cool, let's drill down and see what's down there. They were there to drill, weren't they? They didn't do it. Instead, they packed everything, closed down the project immediately, and said, we are through. And they came home. Now, there were stories out there that, well, you know, this is just where the crust of the earth is real thin, and so we're getting this big magnetic anomaly. Well, if that were the truth, why would you shut everything down and come home? If it's just the earth being the earth, why would you shut everything down and come home? If it's just the earth being the earth, why wouldn't you just go ahead and discover? Be another Christopher Columbus and discover. So the story about it being just where the earth's crust is very, very thin, it may be very thin there. But that isn't why they didn't drill. That isn't why they didn't do what they had come to do. Whatever the reason, it's not because the earth was just being the earth. It's because down under that ice, 2.25 miles down under that ice, there is something huge, 65 miles long. You might say, well, it's a big crack in the earth. Now, wait a minute. It's 46 miles wide. That's one hell of a crack. It's 65 miles long, 46 miles wide. That's big enough for a pretty good-sized city, wouldn't you say? Now, I'm not saying, look, don't go out and tell people that I said there's a city under there. I don't know what's under there. But I'm just saying, I'm using that as an example. You could have a pretty good-sized city. In fact, an enormous city in a space 65 miles by 46 miles. That's enormous. And it's giving off extremely strong magnetic signals. And just like that, NASA and JPL pulled the plug on the project, packed up everything, and came home. Now, as I said, the Russian station, the research station, is right there on Vostok. It would be sort of on the south end of Vostok. It's in the part. If all that ice wasn't there, the Russian station would be in the water. So they're right there on it. JPL left. NASA left, and then we heard all kinds of strange stories and strange rumors. We've heard that there were, you know, special forces, perhaps Navy SEALs, securing the area. Don't know if that's true. I read those stories. You read those stories. Really makes for a great movie plot, but I don't know if it's true. Perhaps it is. Perhaps it isn't. I don't know, and I don't have any way to verify those claims. Things went pretty quiet down at Lake Vostok. Apparently, there has been some more exploration and discovery going on. They haven't been telling you about it. They haven't been telling me about it. But they found something down there in the lake. They found something that indicates to me they know exactly what that anomaly is. Now, we have to step away for a break. When we come back, I'm going to share with you what they found and why it indicates to me they have to know what that anomaly is. They have to know what's causing this magnetic anomaly. And that may be, quite possibly, the link to the South Pole Telescope. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and our discussion of the strange happenings down at Vostok. Remember I told you that the Russians have a research station built right on top of Lake Vostok. There are actually 150 known liquid water lakes under the ice on the continent of Antarctica. 150 of them. Vostok is the biggest. So when they found this big magnetic anomaly, and like I said, it's gigantic, when they found this magnetic anomaly, JPL, that's the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and NASA packed up and went home. An interesting thing happened. Of course, the news media wanted to know why. Why did they just pack up and go home? there had been all this hoopla about how they were going to be able to do their testing of their Mars water drilling technology. And all this, you know, this is the perfect place to test. This is going to be great. And then, boom, they're gone. So the reporters wanted to know why, and there was a press conference. At this press conference, the spokesperson for NASA, and back when I did the original story, that was in 2000. I had the name of this lady. I cannot remember her name now. But when she was asked, you know, who made the decision to pull the plug on it, she said that it was done at the direction of the NSA. Later, and by the way, she was an executive at NASA, and then she's kind of dropped out, and nobody knows really. I mean, you know, she's not there anymore all of a sudden after that press conference. And NASA covered it by saying, well, she really meant to say NASA. Well, that's nonsense. I mean, nobody who works for NASA goes around saying, I work for NASA. They say, I work for NASA. So, anyway, she said that it was at the direction of the NSA. And maybe it was. So everybody left, except the Russians are still there. In 2005, they found something. Now, the Russians have been drilling in the ice above the lake. And they've been trying to work out how they could get all the way through to the open area above the lake. How could they get through the ice without contaminating the atmosphere or the water? Anything that comes from out here and punctures through into that space is going to have contaminants from out here. It's going to have bacteria. It's going to have, you know, various contaminants from the surface world. So they've been working on how to do that. But they found something. So this tells me a couple of things. If they found something, considering what it is they found, they still have been doing, maybe in cooperation with the NSA, I don't know. I mean, that story's out there that the NSA is who shut down NASA's planned experiments, cleared everybody out of Vostok. If that's true, and again, I have no way to verify that, but if it's true, maybe they've been working in conjunction with the Russian research station. Or it could be just the Russians all by themselves. Someone has continued to do imaging and mapping under that ice because, ladies and gentlemen, they found an island. Now, you might be at this point scratching your head and saying, so what? Oh, big so what? If they found an island and that means they're doing some imaging, and it means their images are so clear that they can see that it is an island. That means that the notion that they don't know what's at the north end of that lake, that anomaly that's 65 miles long and 46 miles wide, the notion that they don't know what that is nonsense. They found an island. If they found an island, which is not 65 by 46, if they found an island, they know what that anomaly is. Do you see why that's important? Now, I said that there's a possibility that there's a link between this anomaly and what's happening at Lake Vostok and the South Pole Telescope. There's a possibility of that. Let me explain. On January the 5th this year, this is January the 27th, on January the 5th, an article came out in New Scientist, and it's all about what's happening at Vostok. They say that this ice cap that's over the lake has been there for 14 million years. Now think about this. How could the ice cap form above a lake that's liquid water? Ask yourself, how could it? Well, they say, well, it's liquid water because it has geothermal vents. You may be interested in knowing that the average temperature of that water is 27 degrees Fahrenheit. Freezing is 32 degrees. So what keeps it liquid if it's 27 degrees? What keeps it liquid, according to the scientist, is that there is, they say, geothermal vents. There are geothermal vents that are bubbling up heat and hot water into this lake. That's the heat source. That's what they say. Another thing they say that's pretty interesting, and see, nobody has punched through the ice into the cavity yet, into that 160-mile-long cavity. Nobody's punched through yet, at least officially. But they're already telling us that it's geothermal vents that provide the heat. But it only heats it up to 27 degrees. But they say the atmosphere in that cavity is ultra-oxygenated. It's absolutely saturated with oxygen. Wouldn't you like to know how they know that? If they haven't punched through yet, how do they know what the air is like in that cavity? There are a couple of ways they could do that. There are instruments where they could do imaging, something similar to imaging, but it would give them readings based on the wavelengths bouncing back. It would give them readings to tell them what the atmosphere is composed of in that cavity. They do it with stars. And I'm sorry, extrasolar planets, based on the wavelengths of things coming back to them, waves coming back to them, they can analyze that, and they can tell what the atmosphere is like on that extrasolar planet that may be light years away. So they can do that same sort of thing in this cavity that's 160 miles long, 50 miles wide, and has liquid water. But above it, above the water, there is airspace, and then an ice cap that's 2.25 miles up. So that's one way they could do it. That means if they did it that way, then they have been there continuing to do very detailed studies and imaging. Again, no possibility that they don't know what that magnetic anomaly is. None. The other possibility is that they've actually drilled already through the ice and into the cavity. But they say also that there's very, very high pressure there. Very high pressure. And because of the high pressure, then the freezing point of water would be much lower. So that's a possibility. So let's see if we can kind of get this together here. 2.25 miles under the ice. Now, the reason they say it's 14 million years old, you know, when they drill these ice cores, it's kind of like counting the rings when you cut a tree and you count the rings and you tell how old the tree is. The ice has layers. Every year, every season, there's another layer of ice. Now, to you and me, it might just all look like ice, but to the eye of the scientist, they can see the layers. So they say it's 14 million years old. Okay. If it's 14 million years old, that means they have drilled down at least near the point of breaking through in order to have been able to count those rings. So they say it's 14 million years old. Well, now the Russians have satisfied the Antarctic Treaty Secretariat, which is the body set up to preserve Antarctica, and they have approved the environmental evaluation that the Russians provided, explaining how they would be able to drill all the way through and get into the lake without contaminating it. Already, as they've drilled down, and we know they have drilled down, they have found several very ancient, unknown bacteria, frozen but still alive in the ice. And they've reanimated some of them. And that's as they, very deep, deep, deep down in the ice, as they're getting near to punching through into it. They're going to punch all the way through into the lake. So they're going to drill down to within 30 meters. Yeah. So we're 60 feet. They're going to get within 60 feet of punching through using a conventional ice coring drill. And then they're going to use a very special drill that is thermal. And they say that because of the pressure and because of the water, there'll be no contamination. I'll explain that when we come back. Back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking about the strange happenings, the strange goings on the continent of Antarctica. It is a mystery. The whole continent is a mysterious continent. Very, very different from what we find on the rest of the planet. And we're talking specifically at this point about Lake Vostok. When we went away for break, I was talking about how the Russians are just about to do this. Okay, it's been approved. They're going to do it. So what they'll do is they'll drill down to within about 60 feet, about 30 meters. And then, and now look, that's a deep hole. We're talking about going down 2.25 miles. And then they will use a thermal drill device that will melt its way through to the cavity above this lake. And they say there's so much pressure in there that water, and by the way, it has a camera on it. Okay? So they're saying that this will not contaminate the environment under there. It's got a camera on it. Now, that camera's only useful if you poke it through the hole and then turn the lights on and shine it around and see what you see. I think you would agree with that. If you don't poke the camera through the hole and into that cavity and turn the lights on the device, you're not going to be able to see anything. There's no reason to have a camera. It's got a camera on it. So in order for it to be useful, it has to actually poke through into that cavity, so it's entering that airspace. And they say the reason that it won't contaminate anything is because when they pull this back out, the pressure that's in that cavity will force water back up into that hole where they've drilled, and that it will freeze, and then they'll come back next year and do a regular ice core down that same hole and get that ice core out of there where the water came rushing back up. Well, I got a little problem with that. The problem is you have the surface of the water and then you've got a cavity. I do understand that if there's a lot of high pressure under there, that a lot of that air is going to come rushing up that hole. But depending on how far the water surface is, if it's not pretty close to the top of the cavity, if the water surface on that lake is, say, 50 feet down from the ice covering, so you have the surface of the lake, 50 feet of airspace, and then you begin the ice covering that goes to the surface. If you've got that, I don't think you're going to get water rushing back up there. It's not going to suck water up that. I don't think so. So the whole thing sounds a little flawed. I wish them well with it. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they see on the camera. Here's a question I've got. If all you've got under there is a lake, what is there to see? If all you've got under there is water, what is there that you need a camera for? I can understand having some other scientific instruments on that probe that measure the air and analyze the air to see if their estimates of its composition are correct. If they were going to lower this probe all the way down into the water, which they're not, then I could understand maybe you would need a camera to see what's underwater. But if you're just going to punch through into the cavity, now you're standing there looking at water. What is there to see? Unless you know there's something else there. If you know there's something else there, maybe you want to take a look at it. Does that make sense to you? Like this magnetic anomaly that's 65 miles long, 46 miles wide. Maybe you want to take a picture of it. Maybe that's what this is. In researching for tonight's show, I ran across all kinds of articles and speculations and so forth. A lot of people think, oh, okay, well, that's the Nazi base under there. Yeah, maybe. Some people think, okay, that's extraterrestrials under there. Okay, maybe. We don't know. What we do know is it's there. And we do know that it's giving off an extreme amount of magnetism, magnetic waves. Remember I asked the question, how do you get 2.25 miles of ice up over liquid water? When they explain the mechanism by which this lake remains liquid, even though the temperature of the lake is 27 degrees Fahrenheit. It includes the high pressure in that airspace. The high pressure, they say it's very high pressure because of the weight of 2.25 miles of ice pressing down on it. So it's very high pressure. Millions of years ago, Antarctica was not covered in ice. Vostok perhaps was there then. Perhaps there was a gigantic liquid water lake right there. And then came the snows and the ice. Now, they say part of the mechanism by which this lake remains liquid is it has geothermal vents. Now, if those geothermal vents, under these conditions, with all that ice, 2.25 miles of ice pressing down on it, that's the combination of the geothermal vents and the pressure of that ice, they say, is what keeps the water liquid. But we didn't have 2.25 miles of ice in the beginning. And as it began to fall, as the snow began to fall, as the weather began to change, you didn't have the pressure of all that ice. It wasn't there. How did the lake stay liquid? I contend it could not. If their mechanism that they're describing for how the lake stays liquid, if it's correct, then quite obviously in the beginning you didn't have all that pressure of ice because that ice wasn't there. And since the temperature of the lake now is 27 degrees, since that's the case, it obviously would have been lower than that without all that pressure. The temperature of that lake would have been lower than 27 degrees. It would have frozen over. So let's say that for whatever reason, someone, whoever, we don't know, decided to build some facility deep down in the ice. The ice has fallen. The snows have come. And they decide to build a facility. A facility that has, this is all speculation. Okay, but a facility that has exotic technology whereby they can use magnetic waves to power their facility. Any such facility is going to give off heat. So they build this facility. Now, I want to show you something. I'm going to, those who are watching, I'm going to put the picture of the Amundsen Scott South Pole Station back up here. Because if you'll look in the upper right corner, you will see a circular area. That is what is left of the old Amundsen Scott South Pole Station. It was a dome. It was a geodesic dome. And they built it on the surface, but it didn't stay on the surface. We'll be back. Those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm delighted you're here and my sympathy to you for whatever kept you away for the first hour. We're talking about what's happening at the South Pole. We're talking about the South Pole Telescope and Lake Vostok. Yes, a liquid water lake. A gigantic one. All right, now, I was speculating just a little bit. And it is speculation. And I give credit to several people on the internet who wrote similar speculations and got me to thinking. Theirs were a little bit more out there. That may be hard for you to imagine, but they were a little bit more out there than my speculation is. But my speculation, it's a hypothetical. It's not really even a speculation. If you built a facility, particularly one 65 miles by 46 miles, and you built it before all of the ice was there, and let's say you had the means to power this thing with magnetic waves. You were harnessing and focusing magnetic waves to power this. Power, when it's used, energy, when it's used, tends to give off heat. A facility 65 miles by 46 miles would tend to give off a lot of heat, wouldn't it? And what if you ran tubes out through the lake? You built it at the edge of the lake at that time, and you ran tubes out there through the lake so that the heat would dissipate through those tubes. And now all of the snow and the ice comes. Now all of the things that we know about Antarctica today begin to happen. And while everything else around this lake is freezing, there's a little cavity around those tubes you have out through the lake. A little cavity. The lake's frozen over, but there's a little cavity that develops because of the heat. As the ice continues to pile on, the snow continues to fall, you continue generating heat. But with more and more ice and more pressure, the effect of that heat is growing under that ice. And so eventually it hollows out this space, and there's enough pressure that all of the snow and ice around it are liquefied. So you have a liquid water lake with a dome of air with an ever-growing pile of snow and ice. Now you might say, well, I think that is just crazy. Well, I think it's crazy. I do. I think it's nuts. I think it's nuts that there's a 65-mile by 46-mile structure of some kind under that ice. And they want you to believe they don't know what it is. And they want you to buy that. At the same time, they're able to image well enough to find and identify an island, which is nowhere near that size, in that lake. They can find the island, and they cannot determine what that is at the end of the lake, 65 miles by 46 miles. Nonsense. That's just nonsense. That's ludicrous. Well, again, the official explanation is this is a place where the Earth's crust is just very, very thin, and that's why we have this magnetic anomaly. A couple of problems with that is the researcher who spoke out, who was there doing the mapping, the MRI mapping, when they discovered this anomaly, he said it's way too big. way too strong, too big, for this to be just the daily changes in the magnetic field. So what about this deal about the crust being thin there, and that's just why there's this magnetic anomaly? Again, if that were the case, why did they make everybody leave Lake Vostok except the Russians? The experiment's over. We never even started the experiment. They got there and started to unpack, started to get ready. They were excited. Boom, it's over. The lady at NASA gives a press conference and says it was the NSA that ordered it. Bang, she's gone. Over the crust of the Earth being thin? Now look, if you buy that, I've got some beachfront property in Phoenix, Arizona that I would love to sell you. There are people that will buy it. There are people that buy that story. But if you're one of those people, please contact me about my beachfront property in Phoenix, Arizona. All right, we are going to open up the phone lines in just a moment, but I want to make a connection here. What if Marshall Masters was right? What if his theory is not so far out there on the edge? What if he's right? And the South Pole Telescope, those who are watching are looking at the South Pole Telescope right now, and here's another view of it. What if this South Pole Telescope is where it is? It's right on the South Pole, and by the way, there's a liquid water lake under it. What if it's there to look for the incoming planet X? And what if the incoming planet X is also being tracked by tracking changes in the magnetic field around that 65-mile by 46-mile anomaly under Vostok? Changes in that would give you indications of how severe the changes are going to be for the whole planet. What if? The telephone lines are open, and the telephone number is 623-444-5889. If you are in the USA or Canada, you can call me on the toll-free number if you need to. It is 888-223-4599. If you're outside of the USA and outside of Canada, you don't want to make the international long-distance call, what you can do is send me a flash message by going to my website. Scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show, and you'll see the link that says flash message. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hello, Terry.
How are you doing, C.B.?
Doing good. About to lose my voice, but I'm doing good.
Yeah, that's very interesting. It's hard to say. It's definitely a head-scratcher, unless you're there. I just wondered, once the Russians found out that there was something there, that they pulled rank.
Maybe.
Do they have authority over that landmass, or they have dubs on it?
Well, yes and no. There are no national boundaries down there, and the whole continent is supposed to be entirely for scientific research.
Yeah.
So you know, maybe they said, okay, this is Vostok, this is our area, we want everybody off. Maybe. But that isn't what the lady from NASA said. The lady from NASA
she agreed,
said
huh?
The NSA shut it down.
Wow. Yeah, that would be awesome. You know, what comes to mind is Atlantis, you know. You know, something that big, you know. I know the Germans were, you know, ahead of us, but I don't think they were that ahead of us to build something a city size under the ice there, to escape to, quote-unquote, and live there, all them stories.
I don't think this is the Nazi base, although that would not preclude Nazi descendants who went there and descendants of the people that went there, it would not preclude them being there if it's a facility under the ice. It's possible they could have found it.
Yeah, joining up with whatever is there, you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
That was that island, you know. It's quite easier to identify an island compared to something that is, you know, whether it's shielded, you know, or it's very visible. You know, is there any life signs or any, you know, UFOs or anything that's showing interest, you know, like back off?
Well, we don't know. That. They haven't told us.
Yeah. Because, like, you know, you say that magnetic pull, I think they would have to be giving out a way longer, way bigger signal to Planet X, you know, to draw it in towards Earth, if that was a part of it. You know,
well, I don't think you could have a magnetic field that would have that kind of an effect on a planet that's out there in space.
Yeah, I mean, they could track our planet better than they could track that.
Whatever this is, the magnetic anomaly part of it, look, when you get away from that 65 by 46 mile area, the MRI was getting good images. But as soon as you cross the boundary of that 65 mile area, and you fly over it, wham, it's like a flash of light on the MRI. Of course, it's a flash of magnetic wave.
Yeah, okay? They don't like that, MRIs.
So, yeah. You know, I don't know what it is, but whatever it is, I don't buy the story that it's the Earth's crust is thin there and that is the cause of this magnetic anomaly, because that doesn't explain the actions of NASA and JPL. It doesn't explain anything that's gone on since then.
Yeah, well, they got the rookies out of there. All I was supposed to be wondering, though, isn't there a magnetic field there anyways?
There's a magnetic field all over this planet.
But I mean, you know, north, south, you know, whatever.
There's a magnetic field anywhere on this planet. But these are magnetic waves coming off of this thing, whatever it is.
Oh, you know, if it would be me, I couldn't wait to get down there, but, you know, we'll probably never even know.
Oh, I suspect we will. I suspect we will know. Because, let's say, look, they're saying that this ice cover over the lake is 14 million years old. And, Terry, I started to tell people about this dome at the Amundsen Scott South Pole Station. Now, today, it's a bunch of brown buildings. It looks like Army barracks, but it's offices and living spaces and laboratories and things like that. But in the upper right corner of that picture, there is the remains of what used to be the Amundsen Scott South Pole Station. It was a geodesic dome, and they built it on the surface. But over the years, it got buried by continued snow to the point that they had to dig a tunnel through the ice, and they had a ramp that went down to the front door. Okay?
That's pretty deep.
It's pretty deep. Okay, so what if 14,200,000 years ago, someone was here on the planet and built a huge facility right there? And instead of using gasoline and generators, they were much more advanced, and they were using magnetic waves for energy. And then all the snow and ice came. And then over the years, it got buried under the ice, just like the Amundsen Scott geodesic dome got buried.
Yeah.
But it's
because, do you know if there's anything like, does this have a dome on it, or is
nope,
it shape?
Nope.
Or
nobody's talking.
Anything?
Nobody's talking. We only know the dimensions. It's 65 miles long and 46 miles wide.
That's a city. That's a decent city size right there. I mean, that's, you know, you could pick that out of Denver or whatever. Boston, I don't know how big they are, but, you know, New York.
Very, very few cities on the planet that are as large as that.
Yeah.
There are some, but yeah, very few.
Okay, Kevin.
All right, thanks for the call.
I don't have much else to add to it. You know, it's a brain scratcher.
It is that. Thanks for the call. 623-444-5889. Give me a call, and let's do what Terry says. Let's scratch our heads together here. Things in the story are not adding up, folks. Things in this story are not adding up. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin, it's Mike from Kentucky.
Hello, Mike.
How you doing tonight?
Good.
Take something for that throat.
If I had something, I would, but I don't, so I won't.
Okay. It sounds as though there's some kind of a magnetic generator, just like you've been saying down there, that is ancient by our standards, and maybe something was flown in and parked there years ago, and they just continued to build and expand around it.
Well, that's possible, because that is what happened at the Amundsen Scott station as well. They had this one big geodesic dome, and then today it looks like a small college campus.
I would be concerned about punching through that air bubble down there, that dome that they have, because since they don't know the real pressure, as soon as it breaks through, it could be like a pimple, you know, that has a lot of pressure behind it, and it could just blow out.
Well, it could. Now, here's the thing, though. Mike, they're saying... See, their own words paint them into a corner, because they're saying that the atmosphere is supersaturated with oxygen. How do they know that? There's only two ways. Either they've been using high-tech equipment and scanning that and doing a spectrography, spectrometry, reading of it. Either that's what they've been doing, in which case, they know exactly what's down there. Or they have already punched through, and they've already taken some air samples from down there. It's one or the other.
Well, there's one other possibility, too.
What's that?
Daryl Sims.
I don't get it.
You know, remote viewing.
Well... Yeah, I guess you could. But you wouldn't find that being reported in New Scientist.
Well, probably not, no. But you and I both know that we'd only scratch the surface on how much they tell us about what they know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But did you get my point when I was talking about that they discovered an island in that lake?
I do get your point.
How can you discover an island which is not 65 miles by 46 miles, you know it's an island, and then you don't know what is that thing that's 65 by 46? That's nonsense.
Yeah, that's sort of a contradiction, isn't it?
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, it yeah. is. It, I would say so. Here's another thing. Did you get my point when I said, why would you put a camera on this thing?
Yeah, I think I do, because when you bust through that chamber, if you're not going to have the camera on, then there's no need in having it. Plus, you have to know whether it's an infrared camera or a regular camera to how much light it was going to be radiating from down in that hole.
Well, that's true, but here's the point. That lake is 160 miles long. So you punch through, and you're into that air cavity above the water. It's 160 miles long body of water. What that means is whether you're using infrared or what you're using, or you have lights, it doesn't matter. You got a camera. There's nothing to see but water.
Did you not say that the dome extended above the water about like 2.5 miles?
Not the dome, the ice cap.
Oh, the ice cap itself.
Yeah, the ice cap itself is 2.25 miles high.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. I mean, if it's just water laying there, yeah, you're right. Unless there's something under that water that you're going to try to look at.
Yeah, but see, they're not. According to the official story, they're not going to contaminate that environment. So that means right. They won't be lowering this camera into the water. So what are you going to look at? The surface of 160 miles of water? There's nothing to see.
They have said it's highly charged with oxygen.
That's
so,
right.
So maybe they're wanting to see the color of the water.
Well, maybe. Maybe that's the case. And maybe when they discovered that island, they found that there was some bikini-clad aliens laying on the beach there, and they just want to get some pictures. Maybe a little voyeurism going on here. But seriously,
you know, there's a possibility that there's another entrance to that thing where, you know, like the same one bird went through and some of these other so-called stories you hear.
Well, it could be. But quite seriously, I think the presence of the camera indicates there's a facility down there and they want pictures of it. I think the presence of the camera indicates that. Now, let me put it this way. It certainly could indicate that. To me, it does indicate that. Now, I may be around the corner on this one, but why would you have a camera to look at 160 miles of nothing but the surface of the water? You know, that makes no sense. But if there was something to look at that you really wanted pictures of,
the bottom of the ice and the water, and if there's not any space and there's only water, how are you going to see an island?
Yeah, that's right. Well, there is a space, and if there were not a space, they could not be talking about the atmosphere being charged,
oxygen.
Supercharged
yeah.
with oxygen.
Right, and so that camera is going to be able to pivot horizontal to the ice cap.
Yeah. But I bet you it's doing some recon pictures on whatever that is under there that's 65 miles by 46 miles.
Well, I hope you find out what's going on, and we'll be here listening.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Bye. 623-444-5889, and we have a break coming up. Caller, do you want to hang on through this break?
Certainly.
Okay. You hang on. And when we get back on the other side of this break, we'll take this call and we'll continue talking about this big, big, big mystery in Antarctica. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We have a caller on hold, so let's go straight to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. It's Haya from Victoria.
Hello, Haya.
Hi. I've been listening to you. I came in a little on the late side, but I've been listening to you. And, you know, I do agree with you. I think it is a structure. But, you know, I'm also thinking about, too, maybe it's a structure that either ETs are living in still to this day. It's very possible, considering we have seen a lot of UFOs coming out from the water in that area over many, many years. They've been reported. And we do know from, what's this man? He was arrested not too long ago. He wrote about all the underground bases.
Oh, Dr. Richard Sauter.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, maybe there's more underground bases than we ever thought there was, and maybe there's a different entrance, but what scares me, in a sense, all that pressure and what happened during the Gulf of Mexico, I don't think that they have really thought out what they're doing. They're obviously looking for something. I mean, you just don't put a camera on to mm-hmm. water or fish, for that matter.
Well, you know, so there are so many things about this story
to take a look at, but I don't know. They could blow out that whole area, and then we have a major problem.
Well, yeah. But there's so many things about this story that simply don't make sense. You know, let's say you have three jigsaw puzzles. You put them all in one box, and you shake them up, and now they're all mixed together. And so now you pull out, say, 10 of the jigsaw pieces. Well, they're mixed. Any one of those pieces can make some sense by itself. But that doesn't mean it will fit with the other pieces, because the story doesn't match. The cuts don't match. And that's the problem here.
How can they see an island, but they can't see anything else? It doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense to me.
No.
Having a camera doesn't make sense. See, it would make sense to me if what you're going to do is put sensors on it that can test the air. Okay. That makes sense. We got 160 miles of water. 160 miles. What are you going to look at with this camera? Water? I mean, think about that. And there's no waves under there, so far as we know, because there's no wind. But 160 miles, and you're just going to have a camera to look at the surface of 160 miles of liquid water. Makes no sense.
At all. I would say there's an artifact of some type down there.
I think so.
Something I think they probably want to get before anybody else.
Well, maybe, but you know, if it is extraterrestrial and if there are some living there, you might not want to get a hold of that.
Well, that's what I was thinking, because you don't know what the type of bacteria you could bring up from the surface
mm-hmm.
or end up polluting that whole area.
Yeah. That's true. Well, they have found, as they've been drilling down and doing ice cores down, getting close to this thing, they have found several extremely ancient, unknown bacteria. Now, there's the possibility that that bacteria was native to Earth millions of years ago. It's also a possibility that if that is alien, that if whatever's under there is alien, that that's their bacteria.
Yeah, we may not want to have that,
mm-hmm.
you know, hitting our oceans or the surface. You don't know what it will kill. I mean, it could kill the...
Well, they've already taken it to laboratories and reanimated it, brought it back to life. They don't know what it is.
Oh, God. Sounds like a... It sounds like these guys are a few bricks minus a load.
Yeah, I would say. They have no idea what the bacteria is. They don't know what it does, but they've brought it back to laboratories and have reanimated. One of the scientists that worked on reanimation of the bacteria has been on this show.
Who was it?
Dr. Joseph Resnick.
Okay, oh my, I don't know. This doesn't sound too good, really. So what do you think? You think it's something to do with a leftover ET or possibly even still existing?
Well, I don't know. You know, it could be bacteria that was native to Earth 14 million years ago. On the other hand, it could be bacteria from whatever that facility is, if it's a facility, and it may be extraterrestrial. It may be their germs.
Yeah. That sounds more likely, but the thing is, it's got to be more than just a facility for them to put down a camera.
Yeah, the camera, to me, that's the telltale sign that this is more than just we're going to drill down there and see what the air is like.
Exactly.
There's something they want pictures of. And I bet you, if somebody would provide us with a map, with it marked on the map right where they're going to drill, it's going to be very near that 65-mile line.
Oh.
I bet it is. I bet they're going to drill close enough that they can get pictures of whatever that is.
And they're not really telling anybody anything either.
No. No, even this article that I was referring to doesn't give you a lot of details. But they're, you know, what I looked for were just some clues in here, like the camera. And you know, well, why? You know, why would you? If you want sensors to sniff the air, okay. But, you know, 160 miles of flat water is not...
What type of camera are they putting? Did they say what type?
No.
Hmm. If you knew what type, you could maybe get some ideas, like if it's infrared.
Well, still, you got 160 miles of water to cover. There's even if it's infrared, you're just going to get infrared pictures of water.
Yeah, unless there's living things down there other than... Maybe there's different types of living crabs or fish or who knows?
Yeah, but they're not going to put the camera in the water.
They're not putting the camera in the water?
No.
Well, then why are they taking the camera in the first place?
Good question, isn't it? That's my point.
It doesn't make sense.
That's my point.
It sounds like these guys are a bit Looney Tunes.
Well, yeah, except I'm confident they're not.
No, probably not.
And I'm
now,
confident.
Is the states or just any other people involved in this?
I'm sorry, say again.
Are the states, you know, scientists there or anywhere around the world, are they involved as well?
Probably, but now the only thing official is it's the Russians. But I would imagine that they probably have an international group working together on this, but it's the Russians that are being referenced in this article because it's at, you know, it's their research station there on the lake. So,
yeah, because you know, with what's being said, there's a lot more to it than meets the eye for sure.
Well, there has to be, or there would be nothing to meet the camera.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's no point of having the camera if you're not going to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And I do a lot of photography.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I do a lot of photography myself.
Uh-huh.
And no point of using my camera when I have no intentions of using it or having it with me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
if there's nothing to shoot, then why use the camera?
Exactly.
Hiya, I want to thank you for the call.
You're welcome, and have a good night.
All right. 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889, the mysteries of Antarctica. What do you think about it, huh? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Jerry. I'm calling from Phoenix.
Hello, Jerry. How are you this evening?
Kevin. I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing well, losing my voice, but doing well.
Well, I found a voice in the backyard just a couple days ago. It might be yours.
Well, yeah, but I heard it was a soprano.
That's true.
I'll pass. What do you think about all this, Jerry?
I'm fascinated by it. You know, there are a couple of questions that come to my mind immediately. One, actually, that I think is a good one.
Okay.
with my background as an electronics engineer, I can't help but wonder what the frequency is of this magnetic field that they're picking up. It has to have a frequency.
Yeah.
Is there any word on what that is?
Nope. No, they just said that, you know, it caused a giant flash on the MRI, and they thought that the MRI equipment maybe was malfunctioning, so they landed and checked it and recalibrated it, went back up, did the same thing again and again. And then came the word, everybody leave, everybody go home, get out of here, it's over.
Huh. Well, I'm sure there must be someone who would know. I mean, with a worldwide audience like this, we should be able to have people start checking the people they know and see if we can find out.
Well, yeah, that would be good. That would be excellent. The do you get the point I made about the camera?
Oh yeah, you know, I was listening to that, and it's like that's just, you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense. 2 miles under the ice cap, there is no light.
Well, we don't think there is.
Well, that's what I was going to say, unless there's light being emitted from something underneath.
Yeah.
But just to take a camera and go down and take a look at you know, you might as well hang a camera above your bathtub. You'd see about the same.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, for me, the thing is, let's say there was light. You still don't have anything to take a picture of. Just the surface of the water? Okay, that's no picture. That doesn't tell you anything. If you're sending a camera down there and you're not going to put it in the water, then there has to be something that you're going to look at that you anticipate is going to be there.
Well, you know something? I think that I'm going to... I like the idea about the remote viewing. And I have a good friend who's one of the preeminent remote viewers in the world. I think I'll give him a call tomorrow and find out what he thinks, if he even will talk about it.
All right. Well, let me ask you this. Are you watching the show tonight?
I am. I'm looking right at you.
All right. On the screen, I'm going to put up a satellite picture of Lake Vostok. It is the smooth sort of half-moon depression that you see in the ground. What you're looking at is 160 miles long. This next picture shows the approximate area taken up by that anomaly. It's huge.
Okay, I'm just waiting for it to show up on my end.
Yeah.
There it is.
Jerry, can you hang on through the break?
Absolutely.
All right. We'll be back, folks, right after this.